Greetings once again from Denver, Colorado, the city right here in the middle of it all. You may have heard the news. But stand by now for the World View. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your humble host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you along. Back on board the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I have heard from several listeners over the past 10 days or so reminding me that the name of the show is indeed the Weekly Worldview, and I know I've been out for a little while. But you must understand, I've been roaming the West, looking for ways to ply my trade, looking for work, looking for business. And I must say, all of this news of economic recovery, well, it's all well and good, but, well, it's tough out there. Let me just put it that way. It ain't like it used to be. But we did have a good time as we roamed the wilds of the Badlands of New Mexico and Arizona and all kinds of places that we've been. But we are back. We're back in the saddle, so to speak. And so glad that I missed all the hubbub about the state of Arizona making illegals against the law, at least according to Anderson Cooper. He said, a law in Arizona is attempting to make being in the country illegally against the law. And Anderson was a bit surprised by that. Now, I know I'm one of only 12 or 13 people in the whole country that watch Anderson Cooper religiously. I've got to have my AC fix every day. But it's for sheer entertainment value, trust me. Anyway, it just amazes me that the Republicans and all of you Tea Party types out there who I love you guys, love you Republicans, love you Tea Party folks, you get all worked up about immigration. It's as if the socialist communists who've taken over are able to just push your buttons on this immigration issue. Meanwhile, the entire republic is being taken from us based upon the denial of basic human rights to all of our citizens. That's the fundamental basis of all of it. And we'll get to some of that a little later in the broadcast. There are certainly bigger issues than the fact that poor Mexicans want to come across the border for work or for welfare or why ever they come. Why ever? Is that a word? I have to consult my Texas grammar advisor book. I don't think that's a word. Anyway, I apologize for that. But remember, I did go to public school. So anyways, all the illegal immigration, this is just the beginning of that. The Democrats have just begun to push your buttons on this. So don't get so worked up. Anyway, we'll get to some of that later in the broadcast. Times Square and Pittsburgh, was it, where the bombs have been found? We seem, as a nation, to be benefiting from Bob Enyart's Al-Qaeda theory that all the competent terrorists are dead and only the bozos are left trying to string wire bombs together and they just can't figure out what they're doing. I suppose we should be thankful that we're keeping the competent terrorists busy in Afghanistan and Iraq, and our brave soldiers are over there risking life and limb against the competent terrorists, and meanwhile, the second string is still here in America trying to get things done. And thankfully, it hasn't happened. But have you noticed that since Barry Ho took the reins of power, it is only incompetence on the part of terrorists that has prevented a terrorist attack? In fact, when the terrorists did have their dithers and had their act together, well, like down at Fort Hood, well, there was no protection from terrorism. So let's thank Allah for incompetent terrorists. We really appreciate that. All right, now let's get on into the burning issues of the day. Dateline Lincoln, Nebraska. A Lincoln, Nebraska woman is being accused of biting off part of a man's ear after he insulted her. Anna Mae Godfrey was arrested on suspicion of first-degree assault after the incident. Three men in their 20s at a party were arguing with the rest of the partygoers as they left around 3 a.m. One of the men shouted an insult at Godfrey, possibly related to her weight. We don't have a tape of what was actually said, but the insult could have been something about her girth. Anyway, Godfrey then ran half a block, chased the fellow down, tackled him, and bit off a chunk of his right ear. Proving that she's not that out of shape. She probably... And it's still hungry? No, I can just see her sitting on top of the guy saying, well, I caught you, didn't I? I'm not that out of shape. Oh, you mentioned she might have still been hungry. The missing piece of the man's ear, according to the Journal Star in Lincoln, the missing piece of the man's ear was not found. So perhaps she was still hungry. Anyway, let's move on from Lincoln, Nebraska, to more serious news. From the Finance and Culture File, Maria Pinto, Michelle Obama's fashion designer, has put up a closeout sale on the window of her Chicago boutique. Apparently, Maria Pinto is going out of business. After designing all those outfits that received so many rave reviews for Barry Ho's M.O. And if you remember, now I'm not going to say, now she says that it's a sour economy has placed a strain on her business. It could be that her designs look horrible. When you put an outfit on someone and the first question that they're asked is, hey, did somebody vomit on you?
Oh, no.
You know, that's a sign that maybe your designs are just lacking that certain something. Anyway, Maria Pinto going out of business sale out there in the West Loop of Chicago. Be sure to get by there. It's buy one, get one free. Yeah, it's like a Joseph A. Banks sale out there. All right, now let's move on. Now, this is an interesting story, only because it was not at the top of the Drudge Report in bright red with a siren. That's the only thing that bothers me about this story. A confidential investigation, according to the National Enquirer, is accusing Barack Obama of cheating on his MO. That's right. Yep, Barack... An investigation has learned that Obama has become close to a 35-year-old Vera Baker since 2004, according to the National Enquirer. She worked tirelessly for him to get him elected to the U.S. Senate. She raised millions of dollars in campaign contributions. A limo driver says he took Vera to a secret hotel rendezvous. And then there's all kinds of salacious details here in the accusation in the National Enquirer. Now, there was a time when you could discount what the National Enquirer said as just trash. But those days are long gone. Ever since Monica's blue dress turned out to be true, people now look at the National Enquirer with a certain level of respect for their journalistic integrity. They may be one of the last journalistic endeavors that's actually out there looking for news anymore. Instead of just repeating talking points from this side and that side, and it's the National Enquirer. It's kind of embarrassing. Anyway, this is the story that you must not talk about. I've noticed that. This broke on Friday, and not a word has been even whispered about it in the media, as far as I can tell, but I must say I don't consume a whole lot of media. Right? I mean, what is it? Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Porters, and we watch the weather and we go to bed. That's about it. So we're not big consumers of media. But we did scan the broadcasts on the television, and we have seen not even a hint or mention of this story. So we hope it's not true. I had a serious conversation with the Vegas Economist, where I stayed as I was roaming the Badlands, and he was of the opinion that the only reason Bill Clinton didn't succeed in destroying the country was that he was too distracted by chicks. And our fear was that Barack Obama was focused like a laser on destroying the economy and setting us up into European socialism with no distractions, had the blinders on. And so now we found out, well, I mean, what can you call this, a ray of hope? I mean, it's a tragedy for Michelle and the girls. It's a crime is what it is. It's very sad. But... I don't know. Is it okay to hope that Barry gets distracted by Vice in order to save the Republic? I'm torn. I don't know what to do. All right. Anyway, we'll see how that pans out. The National Enquirer has a tendency to release these crazy stories that everybody just goes, well, that's impossible. And 2 weeks later, I mean, it's Tiger Woods. Speaking of Tiger Woods, Dateline Charlotte, North Carolina, at the Quail Hollow Golf Championship last Friday, Tiger Woods missed the cut after rounds of 74 and 79. The article in Reuters says this was a train crash the golfing world never expected to see. Woods looked like a man with the weight of the world on his shoulders, but insisted the distractions in his private life were not to blame for his disastrous golf outing. Anyway, Tiger is spiritually damaged because of his, well, criminal activity in which he took part. And it's sad to see. It's sad to see. But Tiger's a Buddhist. I mean, what do the Buddhists do to try to recover from moral turpitude? Is it turpitude? Is that a word? From moral failings. What is it that the is there a Buddhist prescription? Is there anything even immoral in Buddhism? I think there is. I'd have to look that up. I'm not an expert on Buddhism. But anyway, it's sad to see Tiger in such dire straits. A 79. If I shot a 79... I would celebrate for a week. Now, Tiger Woods shoots a 79, and everyone realizes that his life is collapsing. Anyway, it's all a matter of perspective, isn't it? All right, now let's move on to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. From the Philadelphia Inquirer, Representative Babette Josephs, a Democrat from Philadelphia, last Thursday accused her primary opponent, Greg Kravitz, of pretending to be bisexual in order to pander to lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered voters. That's right. Babette Josephs said during a fundraiser that she has outed her opponent as a straight person. That's where we are, ladies and gentlemen, in Democrat politics. One Democrat is outing another Democrat as not homo enough. That's right. Now, Greg Kravitz, to his side of the story, he says that he is attracted to both men and women. And he called Joseph's comments offensive. How dare you call me straight? My goodness. He says that kind of taunting is going to make it more difficult for closeted members of the LGBT community to be comfortable with themselves. He said it's damaging. At which point Babette Joseph said, I didn't hear any lisp there. Where's the lisp? I told you, he's straight. let's see. According to Mark Siegel, publisher of the Philadelphia Gay News, he says, we've hit a new high point when candidates are accused of pretending to be gay to win political office. So the gays are just, well, gay about this. They've reached a new high point. Anyway, he says, I take it as flattery. It shows how far we've come as a community. All right, so there's your city of brotherly love. Well, apparently not enough brotherly love going on for one politician there in the Democrat Party. But let's move on because that's frankly pretty disgusting. All right. Now, if you weren't confused enough at that, let's move to Dallas, Texas. A lawyer for a Dallas man trying to divorce the man he married in Massachusetts. I mean, do I have to go any further? Do I need to go any further? He's trying to divorce the man he married in Massachusetts. He's told a Texas appeals court that his client is entitled to a divorce because he had a valid marriage there in the state of Massachusetts. But the Texas Attorney General's office argued that the marriage isn't recognized by Texas, so they cannot get a divorce. They are free, however, to be miserable. The appeals court said the parties lack standing to file a divorce case because they're not married. Well, the Dallas men, according to this article, this AP article, they wed in 2006 in Massachusetts. You remember Massachusetts, Yeah, that's where Mitt Romney instituted for the first time homosexual marriage. Well, these two Texans went up there because down in Texas, well, we don't marry off no boys to no boys. You don't do that, go up in Massachusetts, you some kind of freak. So off they went, and they got married in 2006 after Mitt Romney, the conservative, Republican, pro-family leader that we all look to as our great white hope for the 2012 election. And I mean white in the sense of good, not in the sense of black and white, not in a racial sense. Just that Mitt is pure as the wind-driven snow when it comes to his conservative credentials. You know, homosexual marriage, $50 copay abortions that he instituted there in Massachusetts. Those are his bona fides. All right, but anyway, these two sodomites, if for lack of a better word. Now, that is a word. These two, they went up there and got married in Massachusetts, and shock of all shocks, they got separated 2 years later. Yeah, that's like 6 months longer than the average heterosexual marriage these days, unfortunately. Anyway, their relationship lasted about 2 years as a marriage. One of the homo's lawyers said, "My client's very private matter has become a public spectacle." Well, excuse me, Mr. Lawyer, Mr. Esquire. Your client's private matter became public when he got married in public in Massachusetts and declared his homosexual deviancy to be good in front of God and everyone there in Massachusetts. And now he's down there in Texas, and it's all being dragged out in public. And it's frankly embarrassing for the state of Texas. I think these two should just be banished and sent back to Massachusetts and forced to live with one another. All right, finally, as if you thought the last homo had creeped out of the closet on the Worldview this week, you would be wrong. The mayor of Washington, D.C., according to WorldNet Daily, honored the executive director of a leading ex-gay organization. That's right. An organization that helps homosexuals recover from their deviant behavior and become normal people again. Well, here's what happened. Parents and Friends of Ex-Gays and Gays is a group called PFOX, issued a news release about D.C. Mayor Adrian Fenty's recognition of PFOX executive director Regina Griggs. In an official Government of the District of Columbia Certificate of Appreciation, originally signed and issued by the D.C. mayor back in November of 2009, the mayor of Washington, D.C. praised Griggs, who helps homos to recover. The mayor of D.C. praised Griggs for her dedication, commitment, and outstanding contributions in her role at PFOX. Well, as you can well imagine, when word of the honor hit the newswire, the mayor's office was hit with instant outrage from the homo fag community there in D.C., and they've got a pretty strong one there. Now, Mafara Hobson, a spokeswoman for the D.C. mayor, the aforementioned Adrian Fenty, explained to the Washington Post that the award was actually a staff-level error. That's right, it was all a mistake to honor an organization that would help homos repent of their destructive lifestyle and actually live normal lives. We would never honor anyone for doing that. So the spokeswoman for the D.C. mayor said, "We apologize for the error as it runs contrary to the mayor's vision of a more open and inclusive city. The mayor is proud of his ardent support of the lesbian, gay, the bisexual, and don't forget the transgendered community. We support all of that, even though their lifespan is about 15 years shorter than the normal person's. They're living a lifestyle that is deadly and destructive, and we, in the mayor's office in Washington, D.C., want to see as many fags die as possible." All right, well, I made up that part about the about the mayor's office actually saying they wanted fags to die. They only institute policies that make sure homosexuals will die. They don't come out and say it. So I made that up. Anyway, we here at the Weekly Worldview, we honor parents and friends of ex-gays and gays, PFOX. We honor them for helping homosexuals to come out of their destructive lifestyle. I mean, we would honor someone who helped people get off heroin, honor someone who helps people get off crack. We would honor someone who stops a woman from killing her child at an abortuary. And we would honor any organization that helps homosexuals to repent and possibly preserve their lives on this planet. So they get the honor, they can have it here, and I can assure you I will not apologize for issuing. I'll even print up a certificate if it'll make them feel better. All right, now, that was the culture file. It's a little bit distressing. So let's move on into the justice file for just a little bit of good news. A Utah judge signed a death warrant last Friday allowing the state to execute one Ronnie Lee Gardner using a five-man firing squad. And the audience went wild. Yeah, I know. I know. This is pretty cool. Utah still uses the firing squad. They still give death row inmates the option to select a firing squad. Now, they don't anymore. But this fellow's been on death row so long that he's grandfathered in under the old rules that still allow for the firing squad. And Ronnie Lee Gardner has chosen the firing squad. Let's see. According to CNN, this would be the state's first use of the firing squad since 1996, when John Albert Taylor was executed for the assault and murder of an 11-year-old girl. Taylor said he chose the method in order to embarrass Utah, which at the time was the only state that offered the firing squad as an option. But what Mr. Taylor didn't realize was that he was being executed for a brutal assault on a young girl and then her murder. And so the firing squad, well, we were all very happy to see it. And I'm sure the family of that young girl was very happy to see it as well. And there's no embarrassment in a firing squad. Well, unless you miss the guy. I mean, that would be embarrassing. But that's the only source of embarrassment I could see ever coming from a firing squad. Now, let's see more from this CNN story. This latest firing squad candidate, Ronnie Lee Gardner, he was convicted of murder in 1985. Convicted of murder in the 1985 killing of an attorney. All right, now, even though it was a lawyer, okay, I understand there's a certain bias out there, especially in my audience. Even though it was a lawyer, I mean, 1985? For crying out loud. 1985, let's see. I was, my goodness, that's a long time ago. So he's been on death row since 1985.
We weren't born yet.
My wife claims she wasn't even born yet. Anyway, I was a wee lad. And that's about all. We'll wait. Now, let's see. The execution is scheduled. I don't want to leave you hanging on this. Set your DVR. Oh, no, that's right. We can't. That's unfortunately that we can't set our DVR for June 18th. And, well, hopefully someone will be rolling videotape. There's nothing more satisfying than seeing a murderer executed, especially by violent means. All right. And folks, I just want to let you know, if you hear a story about a certain crime, a man assaults a girl and brutally murders her, and you feel this desire in your heart to physically wrench his neck and kill him with your bare hands, there's a good chance that you are a godly man. Now, you have to resist the urge to do it yourself, but it's a natural urge, and it's good. It's a God-given urge, a God-given recognition of the need for justice. Now, if you hear of a brutal assault and murder of a girl, and your first thought is, I wonder what happened to that poor murderer in his childhood. I'd like to help him. I'd like to rehabilitate him. There's a good chance, if you have those kind of feelings, that you're on your way to hell with jet rockets. And you need some counseling. All right. Now, because the fastest way to help a murderer repent is to tell him, you're about to meet Jesus. That's right. He'll start thinking seriously about making some changes in his life. Now let's move on through the justice file. We'll go to San Francisco, from the Associated Press. Chelsea King's parents reluctantly agreed to a sentence of life in prison for their daughter's rapist and killer, calling the death penalty in California an empty promise. This is the family of a girl who was brutally assaulted and murdered, having to settle for life in prison. Why? Because California's death penalty, they say it's an empty promise. The Kings join a growing list of victims' families, law enforcement officials, and other capital punishment proponents who have grown disillusioned with California's death penalty. Wow. The decision to forego capital punishment for registered sex offender John Gardner, another registered sex offender, has brutally assaulted and murdered a girl. How much longer are we going to register these bastards? I'm not going to go off on this. Anyway, he admitted killing Chelsea King and another teenage girl. Wow. And the parents, they were basically told by the governing officials there in California, look, there's no hope. You know, by the time we execute this guy, you'll be dead. Your grandchildren will be in wheelchairs by the time we execute this piece of garbage. Yeah. It's just sad. Five more inmates joined California's death row this year, pushing their death row population past a record 700 inmates. By far the nation's largest death row population. Florida's second with 394. Texas is third with 333. Legal challenges in California have halted executions in the state since Clarence Ray Allen was put to death back in 2006. The lawsuits are far from being resolved, and most observers believe it could be years before another execution takes place at San Quentin. Only 13 condemned inmates, according to this AP story, have been executed from the time capital punishment resumed back in 1977 until February of 2006. So let's do the math on that. 77, 87, 97. So that's almost 40 years. Am I right? 87, 97, 07, 30 years. Almost 30 years. In 30 years, they've had 13 executions in California. Meanwhile, it's like a bloodbath out there. People being murdered every day in California. California Chief Justice Ron George told the California Commission on the Fair Administration of Justice that the state's capital punishment system is, quote, dysfunctional, unquote. That's the Chief Justice. The Chief Justice of the California Supreme Court. Now, what gets me here, folks, in California, they have an organization called the California Commission on the Fair Administration of Justice. The California Commission on the Fair Administration of Justice, shouldn't that be the judges? Do you need a second organization? If you need a second organization, maybe you need to look at who your judges are. You've got a problem. The Fair Administration of Justice should be carried out by the judges. And if it's not, they should be prosecuted. But they're not. And so California continues to circle the drain. Listen to this from the Associated Press. Dateline Los Angeles, California. The Los Angeles court system has already closed 17 courtrooms and another 50 will be shut down come September unless something is done to find more money. The judge who presides over the system predicts chaos and an unprecedented logjam of civil and family cases in what he calls a worst-case scenario. Custody hearings, divorce proceedings, small claims disputes, juvenile dependency matters, and civil lawsuits have been delayed amid the courtroom shutdown in Los Angeles. Drivers who choose to fight traffic tickets now have to wait up to 9 months to get a trial started. Complex civil lawsuits, according to the AP, involving businesses, can expect to take an average of 4 years to finish because California is out of money. And they've had to make cuts in their justice system, and now their justice system is, well, it's at risk of just completely collapsing. Now, according to the AP, the criminal courts are immune from the cuts out of a so-called concern for public safety. So as of right now, the criminal courts are said to be immune. But how long can that go on? How long can that go on before a bankrupt government abandons justice altogether? I mean, California has already abandoned justice in practice. They may just abandon it in fact. and just, I don't know, farm out their courts to New Mexico or something. All right. Anyways. That's the state of justice circa 2010. Here in the last stand of freedom on earth, the United States of America. All right, now, the devil with his mask off. In a speech in Quincy, Illinois, President Barry Ho is quoted as saying, now, what we're doing, I want to be clear, we're not trying to push financial reform because we begrudge success that's fairly earned. I mean, I do think at a certain point you've made enough money. No surprise there, right? That's Barack Obama. He's a socialist. He's a stone Marxist. He thinks at a certain point you've made enough money. And he's willing to take that decision for you and let you know, and then take the rest of that money and squander it on liberal programs. Right? No surprise that we hear that from Barry Ho. He's the devil with his mask off. Well, listen to this. All you Tea Partiers out there, prick up your ears. From CNN, a week after declining to appear with Sarah Palin at an event in Boston, Senator Scott Brown says he'll stick with fellow Massachusetts Republican Mitt Romney over Palin if the two were to face off in a GOP presidential nomination. I am going to support Governor Romney. Brown is quoted as saying, he sounds an awful lot like Ted Kennedy. Can we roll that tape again? I am going to support Governor Romney. Scott Brown sounds a lot like Ted Kennedy. It's weird. Okay, Tea Partiers, are you beginning to get the picture that you've been suckered, that you've been duped by the Republican Party? I know that you all think, well, you say, well, we knew he wasn't as Republican and conservative as we wanted, but hey, it's Massachusetts. Well, wouldn't you rather have someone who you know where they're coming from in Massachusetts instead of someone whose mask is going to come off at the last minute? There's going to come a time when you Tea Partiers are counting on Scott Brown, and he is going to screw you. And you are naive, and frankly, you deserve it, and it's just unfortunate. All right. Now, more of the devil with his mask on. Sacramento, California, from the Associated Press. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is pledging California's full support for national health care reform, throwing the weight of one of the nation's most prominent Republican voices behind Barry Ho's health care overhaul. Schwarzenegger says he has long supported the concept of universal health coverage, and it's time to set politics aside and start implementing the law signed by Barry Ho earlier this year. Yeah. Now, according to the Associated Press, Schwarzenegger's comments mark a change in tone for the Republican governor. A change in tone? Come on. Only to complete morons who haven't been paying attention to the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a liberal, Scott Brown is a liberal, Barry Ho is a liberal, but Barry is a liberal with his mask off. We know who we're dealing with when it comes to Barry Ho, and it's a fair fight. But when it comes to Arnold Schwarzenegger and Scott Brown, I'm telling you, it's just a matter of time before the mask comes off and we all lose. View, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. And you know, after 10 days off, I've got to admit I'm feeling a little bit rusty, and I hope I haven't disappointed with this week's broadcast so far, and I hope you'll bear with me, because I've probably got the most important story of the week sitting before me now, and I want to do a good job. I really do. This is from the Associated Press. Barry Ho has continued a long tradition of presidents in meeting with Billy Graham. That's right. A dateline of Montreat, North Carolina, President Barack Obama made a pilgrimage, last Sunday to Billy Graham's mountainside home. During the visit, according to the Associated Press, Obama had a private prayer with Billy Graham. Yes. That's what I said, a private prayer with Billy Graham. Now, if I'm not mistaken, every president since maybe Johnson, maybe Kennedy, maybe Nixon, I don't know. A lot of presidents have prayed with Billy Graham. And this was a private affair. The press was not invited, but the Weekly Worldview, because we're not the enemy of the illegal immigrants, we don't bash illegal immigrants here. We bash welfare. We think the problem is welfare, not illegal immigrants. And because we're friendly to our brothers across the border, we happen to have friends in the kitchen there at the Billy Graham estate. That's right. And so the Weekly Worldview was the only media outlet with exclusive microphones there for the prayer with Barry Ho and the legendary Billy Graham. Well, Barry, do you want to pray first, or shall I? Well, Billy, I think you should. Age before beauty, and all that. Indeed, indeed, young man. Come on over here. Let's go out. Let's go out onto the veranda here, and let's look out at the gorgeous creation, and let's pray. Let me pray for you. Almighty Father, we both come before you today in unity of spirit and ask for your manifold blessings upon my dear brother Barack here. excuse me, young fella. Why is it that you have your forehead down there on that prayer rug and your keister up in the air like that?
Billy. I must confess, I'm not the most religious of men. And in fact, Billy, I haven't said a prayer since my school days back in Indonesia, and that's how we were taught to pray. And besides, most people keep their eyes closed.
I see. Well, Barry, I'm just not sure.
Well, Billy, if you're uncomfortable, perhaps we could just stand up and sing the Internationale together. I know it by heart.
My goodness, son, I think I'm just going to have to pray that the good Lord help us all.
And that was it, right there. The exclusive from the Weekly Worldview. You heard it first, right here. Billy Graham and Barry Ho. In prayer there. And indeed, we pray that the good Lord will help us all. Is there any more comments to be made on that? I mean, that pretty much says it all. Let's dive then into more serious things. Let's get into the personhood file. And I'm going to start in China. Dateline Dafeng, China. For years, China has curbed its once explosive population growth. Do you like the way the AP puts that? Now, what do you associate an explosion with? Is an explosion good or is an explosion bad? Well, I would posit that the word explosion generally has a negative connotation. So the AP says that China's population growth was explosive. It's as if China hadn't started butchering their children in the 1970s, that all of Asia would have just exploded. Anyway, so for years, China curbed its once explosive population growth with a widely hated one-child limit that at its peak led to forced abortion, sterilizations, and even infanticide. At its peak, the AP says, as if right now there's not forced abortion, sterilization, and infanticide going on in China. I can assure you that it is still going on and that the one-child policy is still being enforced. Now, according to the AP, the policy may be on its way out, as some demographers warn that China is facing the opposite problem, not enough babies. At which point Christians and conservatives say, duh, no kidding, geniuses. We told you not to butcher the next generation. We told you not to slaughter them and sell their body parts and make medicine out of them. We told you not to do it because you'd all end up a bunch of geezers with no one there to do the work to feed you and to wipe your bottom in your old age. Well, guess what? We were right. The liberals were wrong. Now, the Chinese government has commissioned a feasibility study. They did this last year on what would happen should it eliminate the one-child policy or do nothing. So they're actually studying what would happen. And as the population shrinks in China, which is projected to begin in about 15 years, China may find itself with the wrong mix of people. Too few young workers to support an aging population of selfish geezers who butchered their children. And in China, they were forced to butcher their children or forced to sterilize after one child. It's a shame. It's one of the biggest crimes in the history. It's the biggest crime in the history of the world. The abortion holocaust, the holocaust brought on by surgical abortion in the 20th century will go down as the worst crime, the worst human crime in all of history, all of human history. But back to the article. In a survey of seven counties there in China, 69% of those eligible to have a second child said they would stop at just one, with economics being the major factor. So here's the government thinking, maybe we'll stop this one-child policy. When they survey the people, they find out that they've been successfully brainwashed. Nearly 70% of them don't want a second child as it is. They've believed the propaganda. They've bought into the big lie that children are bad, that having babies is an economic risk, that it's not economically viable to have more than one child. The people have actually bought into the lie. So Zhang Zhenzhen, who headed the study, he says, quote, government control is no longer necessary to maintain low fertility. The people have bought into it. In the 1970s, according to the AP, the average Chinese woman had 5 to 6 children. Today, China's fertility rate is 1.5 per woman. Sad. It's just sad. But you know, if you tell a lie big enough, long enough, and loud enough, people believe it. That's why the Bible calls people sheep, and that's why the government has, governing officials have a responsibility not to mislead the sheep. And in the face of the government doing it, the church has a responsibility to stand in the gap and say no. But the church in China was destroyed. Not unlike the church here. I'm reading a Bonhoeffer. If you're not familiar with the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, I don't want to ruin it for you. There's a book written by Eric Metaxas that you must read. Read about the state of the Protestant church in post-World War I Europe, and you will learn a lot about the state of our culture today. Anyway, I'll put a link. You should buy the book. It's phenomenal. Not only is it an inspiring read, but it is well written. Eric Metaxas is a talented writer who the words are compelling. You're at the edge of your seat to turn every page. A phenomenal book. A seminal work, I believe. Eric Metaxas, Bonhoeffer. I'll put a link up. Get it. All right, now, into the personhood file. We have a joint statement of the Missouri Catholic bishops on the Personhood Amendment Petition Drive. Those of you who have been listening to the show know that personhood advocates are actively gathering signatures in Missouri. Well, the Catholic bishops have come out, and they say, we wish to provide some guidance regarding the Personhood Amendment. They say, we want to let you know that Missouri already has a personhood statute that's been part of the Missouri law since the mid-1980s, and the bishops go on to say that basically this personhood initiative is a waste of time. Now, here's what the Catholic bishops, in their statement, they quote the personhood law. It became effective in Missouri in 1988. So you would think, well, why didn't abortion end in 1988 if personhood is the magic bullet? Well, here's what the law states. It says, the laws of the state of Missouri shall be interpreted and construed to acknowledge on behalf of the unborn child at every stage of development all the rights, privileges, and immunities available to other persons, citizens, and residents of the state subject only to the Constitution of the United States and decisional interpretations thereof by the United States Supreme Court. So written into this personhood law is an exception that you could drive an abortionist through. They basically say that an unborn child is a person, but if the Supreme Court says they're not, they're not. So the Catholic bishops are abandoning their responsibility to stand up for personhood based on a lie. They're lying to people saying we already have personhood and it doesn't work. You don't have personhood without exceptions, you blind guides. Anyway, the personhood bill, the personhood initiative here in Colorado has no exception for the Supreme Court. In fact, we want a confrontation with the Supreme Court. We want a confrontation with anyone who would authorize the legalized murder of innocent people. We want to confront you politically. We want a political war with you. We want to go to political war with you and defeat you and drive you from the field of battle. We want to provoke a confrontation with no exceptions. And we will do it in Missouri. We will do it in Colorado. We will do it in Mississippi. We will do it in Montana. We will do it in Florida. We will do it wherever we can make the battle. We will confront you and we will provoke the confrontation. We are not afraid. Someone must stand up and speak out against the greatest crime in the history of mankind. And we are ready to do it. Now listen to this headline. This just makes me sick. From ABC, the headline says, Oklahoma abortion law, no exceptions even for rape. Now, when you read that headline, a pro-life person who believes that abortion is murder and should never be legal, never, you should never kill a child because his father is a rapist. That makes sense, doesn't it? Do you believe you should kill a child because his father is a rapist? Surely you don't. So you read this headline and you think, wow, we're really making progress. But then when you read what the law is, it's a new Oklahoma law. Women who've been sexually assaulted, along with any pregnant woman seeking an abortion, must undergo a sonogram. The doctor must turn the screen towards the woman, describe the fetal dimensions in detail, like the number of fingers and toes, let her listen to heart activity, and then they can kill the baby. So this is another law that says if you do this, 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 and this, then you can kill the baby. If Roe versus Wade is overturned, this law will stand because it ends with, and then you can go ahead and kill the baby. So the headline is a complete lie. This is another abortion regulation. Now, the liberals are upset because there's no exemption for victims of rape and incest. Okay, so they put that canard out there. And if you're stupid enough to argue over things like that, well, then you're not part of the true movement and you should just move on. Go watch the ball game or something. Now, the Oklahoma law was enacted last week after both the Republican-controlled House and Senate overrode a Democratic veto of the bill. Already, one of the three abortion clinics in Oklahoma City is reporting that women are so upset about the sonogram procedure that they're leaving the clinic crying. They also report that not one patient would look at the screen. They all close their eyes and turn their heads. Several of the patients were in tears, but not one has changed their mind yet. Now, I know what the abortion regulators say. Well, if we make women look at these, at least some of them will choose not to kill their baby. And that's probably true. I'm willing to grant you that that is probably true. Not probably true. I'm certain that at least one woman in the near future is going to look at that and decide not to kill her baby. But what about the hundreds and hundreds who don't change their mind? You've made them harder. You've hardened their conscience and hardened their heart. They go back into that clinic after seeing that and still kill their baby. What have you made? How many monsters are you willing to produce to prevent one abortion? There are other ways to prevent abortion besides regulating the murder of innocent people and casting aside their personhood, their humanity. If you disregard the personhood of one baby, then it's as if you've killed the whole world. How can you be so foolish? How can you make these mistakes? You should be ashamed of yourselves. Here's an editorial from CNS News regarding personhood. The standard claim currently made by pro-lifers who oppose the personhood movement is that if any legal measure recognizing the personhood of all human beings from the beginning of their biological development reaches the Supreme Court and loses, this would set back the pro-life movement by 25 years. The editorialist says, if it is possible for a single Supreme Court decision to set the pro-life movement back a quarter of a century, then the pro-life movement in this country has made no progress at all. I couldn't agree more. If your house is built on sand, that one decision could eliminate all the progress you've supposedly made in the last 25 or 30 years? Well, your movement is a failure. That's a message to National Right to Life. Your movement is a failure. The editorialist goes on, to argue that the Supreme Court has complete control over the success or failure of a movement is to say that the movement has done nothing but focus on nine people. And that's what National Right to Life has been doing for 30 years. They've been focusing on nine people who will never repent. Never. Have you looked at Dred Scott? Have they repented for Dred Scott? Has the Supreme Court come out and said, we apologize, we were wrong for declaring that black people were less than fully human? No, they have not. They will never come out and say that they're sorry for declaring that a fetus is less than 100% human. They will never repent. Yet we've been told that's where we need to focus. Anyway, the editorialist over at CNS News says, leadership is hard, but the test of a leader is their ability to present an inspiring vision and to convince others to strive to achieve that vision. The hardest part is promoting belief in that vision and the possibility of achieving that vision. And if you haven't caught the vision of personhood, the righteousness of declaring that every innocent human being deserves the protection of the law, if you can't catch that vision, then go watch the ball game. You shouldn't even be involved in the argument. National Right to Life has abandoned the personhood of every child. They've lost their way. They've passed hundreds and thousands of laws that will keep abortion legal if and when Roe versus Wade is ever overturned. And the only way that we can save the soul of the nation is by standing up and saying, every human being is a person. Every human being deserves to be protected by love and by law, and that no longer will we allow nine men or any man to tell us anything different. Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. We're rounding third, and we're headed for home. We've got a little bit more in the personhood file. I'm not sure where I want to go first. Well, let's start with full disclosure, right? Let's go to Life News, Dateline of Sacramento, California. Organizers of the Personhood Amendment in California announced that they failed to obtain enough signatures to qualify for the 2010 ballot. The amendment would define a person as a human being at the moment of fertilization, and would have challenged the status of legal abortions in the state of Colorado. The California Civil Rights Foundation, founded by Walter Hoy, had hoped to get the measure before the state voters. The group needed about 700,000 signatures to qualify, but brought in just under 600,000. And so, personhood will not be on the ballot in California in 2010, but I sent an email to Reverend Hoy, and I reminded him that this is war. Now, this is political war, war by other means, but this is war. No war has ever been won without losing at least one significant battle. In fact, many battles are lost, and it's the battles that we lose in which we often learn the most. And I reminded Dr. Hoy that his efforts have led to an infrastructure of personhood advocates in California. Over 500,000 identified. So the infrastructure is coming together in California. It's a big state. It's a populous state. We knew it wasn't going to be easy in California. In fact, probably one of the most difficult states to put an issue on the ballot is the state of California. But Dr. Hoy and Lila Rose and the personhood advocates out there have begun to lay the foundation, and we cannot give up. That's the key. We cannot be discouraged, and we cannot give up in California, because 2012 is just around the corner, Reverend Hoy. Lila, 2012 is calling. You've laid the groundwork. And whether you take it to the next level or whether you hand it over to those personhood advocates who you've identified as leaders, this battle is bigger than you or me or any of us or any single event. Whether we win or lose at the ballot box, whether we make it on the ballot in any given state, is secondary to the war. The war effort must continue. So I pray that there is someone in California who will come up alongside Dr. Hoy and encourage him and even help him to take this to the next level for 2012, because we can't abandon California. I know everyone says it's the land of fruits and nuts, but we got to care about those people's souls out there too. There's a lot of good conservatives and Christians out in California. They're overshadowed by the freaks, but they're out there. So let's not give up on California. All right, now one more from the personhood file. Now this is disturbing. A mother in Italy had opted for an abortion after prenatal tests suggested that her baby was disabled. However, the infant survived the procedure, which was carried out in the Rossano Calabro Hospital, and the baby was left by doctors to die. The baby was discovered alive the following day, 20 hours after the abortion, by Father Antonio Martello, the hospital chaplain. He found the baby wrapped in a sheet with his umbilical cord still attached, moving and breathing. Italian police are investigating the case for homicide because infanticide is illegal in Italy. Yeah, their infanticide law means that doctors have an obligation to... Now listen to this. This is... Tell me we're not living in an Orwellian, bizarro world where the truth is mocked in the law. The truth is denied by the very lips of those who write the law and by the hands of those who carry out the law. The law is a lie. Listen to this. The infanticide law in Italy means that doctors have an obligation to try to preserve the life of a child once that child has survived an abortion. It's just bizarre. So if you can't manage to kill the baby, then you're obligated to save the baby. Well, in Italy, there's a law called Law 194. It's their anti-abortion law. It's so politicians in Italy can say, abortion is illegal here. Law 194 prohibits abortion when there is a possibility of the fetus living separately from the mother, and permits abortion only when the continuation of the pregnancy would result in life-threatening danger to the mother. So that's their law. Now, if you remember the beginning of the story, that law doesn't match the circumstances here, does it? Because this mother had some tests that said that her baby was going to be... How did they describe? Her baby was going to be disabled, according to tests. Now, that doesn't fit with... There's definitely a possibility of the fetus living separately from the mother, and continuation of the pregnancy wasn't necessarily going to result in life-threatening danger to the mother. So that doesn't match the circumstances, does it? Do you know why? Because the law here is an ass. Because once you make an exception that dehumanizes any person, then it is always possible to find the means to kill that person if you want to kill that person. Whether it's a black man, or a Jew, or a Chinese immigrant, or an Irish immigrant, once you dehumanize that person, well, then it's just a matter of finding the mechanism to legally kill that person. So in Italy, abortion is ostensibly illegal, but it happens every day because there's an exception that denies the personhood of the baby. And it's the same in country after country after country who've bought into the big lie sold to them by Margaret Sanger and the Americans in the eugenics movement. The foundations of the eugenics movement are right here in America. The intellectuals who sought to create a system by which they could dehumanize and murder people is born right here in America. It's like jazz. It's one of our contributions to society. The most significant contribution that America will have been said to have made when history is written. You want to go into the war file? Well, we'll do the war file quickly because, well, it's all pretty much straightforward. I've got a Wall Street Journal article. They say that the strategy for stopping Iran's nuclear program is turning into a race against time before options turn from mediocre to bad to worse. The goal of American policy right now, according to Wall Street Journal, is to slow down the clock. The hope is to buy time to give other kinds of pressure a better chance to work before military options move to the forefront. The Obama administration, their UN resolution imposing new economic penalties could have been passed 2 months ago, but it hasn't been because of resistance from some of our allies. Now American officials say they hope an unresolution will pass in the next few weeks. An unresolution that would clear the way for step two, additional sanctions. So do you see the connection here? We have lost any moral capital we have in the world. Our nation has. Our leadership. They've squandered the moral capital, the political capital that's been built up in this nation over the centuries. They've squandered it. And now they can't even stop a madman regime from acquiring nuclear weapons. Israel, from the Associated Press, Israel is warning that we're running out of time. Israel warns against giving them too much time. Yeah. Israeli Defense Minister Ehud Barak says the world can't afford to wait to see if Iran backs down. He supports the U.S. focus on tougher economic sanctions, but he added that only time will tell to what extent sanctions are effective in persuading Iran to give up its nuclear ambitions. Iran's not going to give up their nuclear ambitions, you idiots. It must be taken from them. But do we have the capital to expend in order to make it happen? I think not. More from the war in North Korea. Choi Sung-young, a campaigner for the return of South Koreans abducted by the North, has told AFP, despite Pyongyang's denial, many North Korean soldiers, believe a torpedo sank the South Korean ship in the disputed waters. You remember the ship that fell off the face of the earth? Well, the North Korean military, the average guy, he thinks that the North Koreans sunk it with a torpedo. Seoul, in the South, has so far refrained from pointing the finger at the North over the sinking of the Chonan, a ship called the Chonan, back on March 26th. And South Korea says only that an external explosion was the most likely cause. Well, maybe it was a torpedo left over from the Korean War, and it's just been buzzing around in the South China Sea for 50 years. And it just happened to hit the Chonan that day. I don't know. I tell you, it's bizarre. All right, one more thing. From the Domestic Tranquility File from Chicago, two Illinois lawmakers say violence has become so rampant in Chicago that the National Guard must be called in to help. Chicago Democrats made a public plea to the governor last week to deploy troops to the streets of Chicago. Isn't this where Barack Obama came from? I mean, can we look at what he's left in his wake and make some determination about where he's going to take us in the future? It's a little bit scary. Anyway, the request for the military comes amid a recent surge in violent crime, including one night 2 weeks ago that saw 7 people killed and 18 wounded mostly by gunfire. That's according to AP. They say that people were killed mostly by gunfire. I would posit that they were killed by other people, not by gunfire, you idiots at the Associated Press. All right, but that's all we can do. We can only do so much in an hour every week, but we'll be back with you next week. Until then, I want to thank KGOV. By the way, I will be on the radio a lot next week here in Denver. If you're in town, give a listen at AM 670, The Blowtorch. I want to thank KGOV, Denver Bible Church, Personhood USA, American Right to Life, Colorado Right to Life, Theology Online, and of course my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I'll be back with you next week, and until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.